Robinhood Radio presents Your Health with osteopathic physician Dr. Kim Tripp, a show presented monthly on Robinhood Radio, discussing the challenges faced and the solutions that are available for keeping vital health and well-being throughout our lives. And now, here's Dr. Tripp.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp, osteopathic physician. This is the health show created to bring you vital information and discussion of all sorts of health issues on your mind and in your life from the unique perspective of traditional osteopathic medicine. So first, let's clarify what osteopathic medicine means. Osteopathic medicine is practiced by fully licensed physicians in the United States with a DO degree, a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine degree. Our practice is based on the essential relationship in all living things between structure and function. In other words, the natural interdependence between anatomy and physiology, or that between the physics of the body and its chemistry. As osteopathic physicians, we use our comprehensive and precisely detailed knowledge of anatomy and physiology to promote health and healing in our patients. We work gently with our hands to help your body restore optimal function based on optimal structure. Our medical specialty is therefore called osteopathic manual medicine. We receive uniquely in-depth training in anatomy and physiology and their relationship within your body in the context of a full physician's medical training. Only U.S.-trained osteopaths are fully licensed physicians and have all of the current medical pharmacopoeia, nutritional science, and full medical training at our disposal. This means that your individual treatment may include a wide range of approaches, but it will always be founded on our gentle hands-on work. We practice from the unique perspective of first looking for the health in our patients rather than merely finding illness and disease. Our practice has been especially effective for, but is not limited to, musculoskeletal and other structural issues, as well as chronic headache, gastrointestinal problems, post-concussion syndrome, sleep disturbance, allergies, and many, many other health issues. We work together with you, the patient, to help you build health and vitality in your body, mind, and spirit as the solution for your health problems, rather than only treating the disease symptoms. So in the radio show, we tackle health issues from this point of view. What can we do to help you build your health and vitality in order to prevent and heal injuries and disease? And we do that by giving you basic information about the problem to help you understand what is happening, as well as offer solutions and guidance for helping yourself to heal and stay healthy based on our clinical experience with patients in our practice. Before we get started on today's topic, let me just remind you that you can listen to all of the prior Your Health shows online at your convenience, such as the shows on back pain, nutrition, carpal tunnel, etc., by going to Robinhood Radio's website, then the on-demand button, then scroll all the way down and select the Your Health shows. Then you can click on the individual show by topic. The magic of on-demand radio. We love that. So last time, we started on an adventure of exploring and understanding our own gastrointestinal system, our digestive system. We looked at what it is and how it works, the anatomy and the physiology. Today, we're going to start exploring how this is all regulated in a normal system. Before we get into the problems in our next show, there's a lot to understand. But we're going to do a quick review of the structure and physiology from last time just to make sure we don't get too lost in all the details. Recall that the gastrointestinal system includes all the functional organs and tissues that ingest, process, and eliminate waste from food, water, and anything else that we swallow. The GI tract includes the organs from mouth to anus that are the internal tract of the ingested materials once they are chewed and swallowed. So the GI system includes the GI tract, and the tract consists of the oral cavity, our mouth, the esophagus, the food tube in our throat, our stomach, small intestine, large intestine, aka the colon, and the rectum. In addition to the GI tract, the GI system includes the salivary glands, tongue, taste buds, and teeth, as well as the liver, pancreas, gallbladder, and the amazing enteric nervous system. We took a close look at all those elements to leave us with a picture of that system that can be summarized as follows. We eat food that's chewed in our mouths and begins digestion through release of saliva from the oral salivary glands. We swallow the food into our esophagus, the food tube, at the back of our throats, and avoid getting it into our airway through a complex coordination relying on the upper esophageal sphincter that opens to receive food and the epiglottis valve that closes off the adjacent trachea, our airway. The food moves down the esophagus through peristaltic waves and enters the stomach through the lower esophageal sphincter. Once in the stomach, acidic gastric juices are released, and the stomach begins rhythmic contractions that mechanically and chemically break down the food mass into a mixture called chyme. The food passes from the stomach to the duodenum, the beginning of the 30 feet of coiled small intestine, where digestive juices from the pancreas and bile from the liver via the gallbladder further break down the chyme in readily absorbable compounds and nutrients. The chyme passes along the length of the small intestine through rhythmic contraction in the small intestine, where nutrients are absorbed into the blood for use. At the end of the small intestine, the remaining mass passes into the large intestine, the colon. While in the colon, the water and any remaining nutrients are absorbed, and what is left is stool, which is stored in the rectum until it is voluntarily evacuated via the anus during a bowel movement. In our full discussion last time, there was a lot of information, but it was just the tip of the iceberg. Today we're going to delve further into how everything works and into some of how it can go wrong. First, let's look a bit at how this is all regulated and coordinated. The GI system has a number of mechanical and chemical processes and responses that need to be switched on and off during eating and digesting. Hunger and appetite, chewing and swallowing, mechanical and chemical breakdown of food in the stomach and small intestine and large intestine, nutrient and water absorption in the small and large intestines, supply and delivery of regulatory and digestive compounds from the salivary glands, pancreas, gallbladder, and liver, and finally, accumulation and evacuation of stool from the rectum. We will look at each in turn, but first we need to look at the overall regulation of the GI system from the different aspects of our nervous system in total. Recall that our own nervous system can be thought of as having several functional parts. The central nervous system is the brain and spinal cord, our leadership function, the boss, if you will. Then there's the autonomic nervous system, which you can loosely think of as the automatic nervous system. The autonomic nervous system can be further divided into the poorly named sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. The sympathetic nervous system has many stimulating functions, including facilitating that famous fight or flight response, where our heart and breathing rates go up, our breathing gets shallow, our pupils dilate, our generalized muscle tone tightens, and the blood circulation gets shunted more towards the periphery of the body, away from the central organs, to help empower muscles of the legs and arms that enable that fighting and flighting. This sympathetic nervous system response also inhibits digestion, as it will do no good to restfully digest that mammoth burger if you're getting eaten by a saber-toothed tiger. And in extreme situations, it may even stimulate spontaneous, uncontrollable evacuation of the bowel and bladder to eliminate unnecessary carrying weight. The parasympathetic nervous system is the other side of that house and stimulates the rest and digest response. It slows breathing and heart rate, relaxes baseline muscle tone, diminishes pupil size, shifts circulation back to full coverage for all the internal organs, and of course, stimulates the full digestive process, including having a normal bowel movement. Of course, the autonomic nervous system has many more aspects and functions than these, but this gives you the general idea. The enteric nervous system is the gut's own nervous system that is found in the gut tissues and plays an important role in regulating all the aspects of gastrointestinal function. It interacts with all the other components of our nervous system. Overall, the GI system is regulated and coordinated through the checks and balances of interaction of neural signals from the various components of our nervous system and hormonal signals that stimulate different aspects of digestion and the gastrointestinal system and respond to changes such as chewing and swallowing, stretching of the gut wall after eating, and accumulation of stool. The gut hormones work in association with the gut's extensive nervous system, that enteric nervous system, and they play a coordinating role in the control of appetite, the digestion of food, the regulation of energy balance, and the maintenance of blood glucose levels. The gut continuously sends information to the brain regarding the quality and quantity of the food that is consumed. This coordination is amazingly and exquisitely fine-tuned to respond to not only the fact that we are eating, but what we are eating, and whether or not there are harmful materials or microbes in what we just ate. The gut produces more than 20 different signaling compounds that control things like increased or decreased appetite, acid secretion in the stomach, and immune cell stimulation. Our GI system is the largest immune organ in the body. So let's take a look at some of the individual functions and how they might be regulated. Hunger and appetite. The sensation of being hungry, needing to eat, is stimulated and then again depressed by a complex series of interacting hormones produced and interpreted by the gut itself, the brain, and our fat cells. The scope of that complex physiology is too much to delve into today, but it's important to know that there are many different hormones involved that send signals back and forth between our brain, gastrointestinal system, and adipose tissues, our stored fat. For example, ghrelin is a hormone produced in the empty stomach, and its function is to tell the brain that the body has to be fed. It increases appetite. Once we decide to eat and have taken a bite of food, we then depend on the coordination of chewing and swallowing. Chewing relies on a diverse set of voluntary facial, tongue, and jaw muscles that open and close the mouth while moving the food bolus around with the tongue to ensure adequate mechanical and chemical breakdown of the food. Chewing is entirely voluntary. And when we sense that the food has been sufficiently broken down, we voluntarily begin the swallowing process by pushing the food to the back of our mouths against the soft palate. Once the food bolus is back into the rearmost part of our mouths, the swallowing process becomes involuntary and is regulated by the brain stem, which then controls reflexive closing of the airway as the epiglottis closes off the airway with brief cessation of breathing during the swallow, and then reflexive peristalsis of the esophagus itself as the food bolus is pushed down the esophagus to the stomach by the waves of contraction of the muscular esophagus walls. Once the food has entered the stomach, it is now subject to the further mechanical and chemical digestion that occurs there. Through the rhythmic contraction of the stomach walls and release of acid into the stomach cavity. As the stomach fills with food, the walls are stretched. Gastrin is produced in the stomach when it is stretched. It stimulates the release of gastric juice, rich in pepsin and hydrochloric acid, that help to digest the food. The amount of time the food spends in the stomach, being churned and chemically broken down by the acid fluids, varies depending on the food and the amount. This process is affected by the breakdown compounds and changes in pressure within the stomach. Eventually, the pyloric sphincter, that is the valve between the stomach and the small intestine, relaxes and the partially digested food recall this is called chyme, is pushed into the small intestine. During the passage of the chyme from the stomach to small intestine, the liver, gallbladder, and pancreas are stimulated to release their own contribution to the digestive chemical mix through a complex series of small connecting tubes that empty into the upper end of the small intestine. The mixture of food, liquid, and digestive juice that passes out of the stomach in a regulated, controlled manner enters into the small intestine. The average total length of the normal small intestine in adults is about 22 feet. The small intestine has three segments, the duodenum or duodenum, the jejunum, and the ileum. Each part performs an important role in nutrient absorption. In the duodenum, the chyme first enters there where it's exposed to secretions that aid digestion. These secretions include bile salts, enzymes, and bicarbonate. The bile salts from the liver help digest fats and fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A, D, E, and K. Pancreatic enzymes help digest carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. Bicarbonate from the pancreas neutralizes the acid from the stomach. Iron and calcium are absorbed here. The chyme is then further transited down into the second or middle part of the small intestine called the jejunum. Mainly in the first half of the jejunum, the majority of nutrient absorption occurs, involving proteins, carbohydrates, vitamins, and minerals. About 90% of the nutrient absorption happens there. The ileum is the last section of the small intestine and leads to the large intestine or colon. The ileum mainly absorbs water, bile salts, and vitamin B12. The ileocecal valve is a one-way valve located between the ileum and the cecum, which is the first portion of the colon. This valve helps control the passage of contents into the colon and increases the contact time of nutrients and electrolytes, which are essential minerals, within the small intestine. It also prevents backflow from the colon up into the ileum and helps minimize the movement of bacteria from the large intestine up into the small bowel. In terms of regulation of this process, it is again a complicated series of feedback loops involving all the components of the nervous system and hormonal regulation. For example, secretin is produced in the duodenum and has the effect of stimulating the pancreas to produce digestive juices, as well as slowing the emptying of the stomach. Cholecystokinin is produced in the duodenum also. It reduces appetite, slows down the emptying of the stomach, and stimulates the release of bile from the gallbladder. The small intestine itself produces rhythmic contractions that are stimulated by pressure changes and stretching and carry the chyme throughout the length of that 22 feet until it reaches the ileocecal valve and passes into the colon. The primary function of the large intestine, or colon, is to absorb fluids and electrolytes, particularly sodium and potassium, and to convert remaining contents into more solid stool. The colon absorbs, on average, 1 to 1.5 liters of fluid every day and has a capacity to adapt its fluid absorption to as much as 5 liters per day if needed. Another function of the colon is to break down dietary fiber to produce short-chain fatty acids. These are substances that can be absorbed and provide added nutrition. We are dependent on our gut microbial flora for this breakdown. Your infamous appendix extends from the cecum as a small string-like tube that can be very variable in length and shape and seems to serve as a reservoir for beneficial gut flora. The first portion of the colon, the cecum, is shaped like a pouch, and it's the area of storage for the contents arriving from the ileum. The second portion is the ascending colon, where fluids are absorbed and where some stool formation begins. The third portion is the transverse colon. The transverse colon is the longest and most flexible part of the colon. It crosses the abdomen from the ascending colon to the descending colon, where it curves sharply on itself beneath the lower end of the spleen. Accumulating stool is transported to the rectum via the descending colon. As stored stool accumulates, pressure builds in the rectum and stimulates defecation, i.e. a bowel movement, which is dependent on involuntary and voluntary control of the anal sphincters, all of which is regulated by the autonomic and central nervous system, involving a complex set of pelvic muscles and abdominal muscles. And throughout all of this, billions and billions and even trillions of resident bacteria, our gut microflora, are helping to break down the chyme and release crucial nutrients we cannot produce or absorb without them, as well as keeping harmful bacteria in check, and creating extraordinary responses in our brains. We will discuss the gut flora in much more depth in our next show. So you can begin to see here how complex the regulation of our digestive system is. There are so many places things can go awry, and yet our bodies do an incredible job of managing the complex network of signals and countersignals, balancing the whole process all the while we are running around doing what we do all day, every day. Well, I want to close here with a reminder that a good osteopathic physician who is a specialist in osteopathic manual medicine can be helpful for gastrointestinal issues of all kinds, working gently with the involved organs, nerves, vasculature, fascias, capsules, and associated tissues. We'll discuss this too in greater detail in our next show when we tackle the gut flora and common GI problems, how they occur, and how we can help. But now, I seem to have run out of time again. But we'll take up where we left off next time, where our amazing gastrointestinal system. Meanwhile, I want to thank you so much for your attention to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp. Remember, you can email your comments and suggestions for topics to yourhealth@robinhoodradio.com. If you have a health issue yourself and would like to find out about how we might be able to help you in our practice of traditional osteopathy, we're at our offices in Sharon, Connecticut, Dr. Kim Tripp and Dr. Andrew Goldman, Goldman Tripp Osteopathic Healthcare, 860-364-5990, Monday to Friday, 8:45 a.m. to 5 p.m. with evening hours Wednesdays and Fridays, or find us on the web at www.goldmantripp.net. I'll be looking forward to being with you next time. Every other Friday at 12:30 and Sunday evenings at 5:30. Take care of yourself, enjoy your health, and thank you for listening.